Hi, I'm Zathan Goldenwolf, fighter of Irindor.
All right, how's it going? My name is Farion. I'm a hunter of Irindor, and I'm also the envoy in charge of things here in Northern Irindor.
I'm Stone Tread Grigrath. I'm a fighter of Irindor, and I am a proud Heathdorian soldier.
And as usual, I'm Jason, the creator of the Online Army Showcase. And today I'm going to ask you guys, put down your dice and put down your miniature tapes as we go to war with the members of Irindor in this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield! Welcome to episode 19 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Online Army Showcase at army.rocosoftware.com. I want to try to do something a little bit different than what I've done in the past. I've actually going to do what I call a little series of similar interest podcast, where instead of an actual miniature war game topic, I'm going to do something that the miniature war game players might enjoy. So what we're doing here today is we've got some guys. So why don't you tell us a little bit, what's the name of the sport we got going on back here behind us?
Well, first of all, I don't know if you would call it a sport, but what we have going on behind us.
I call it a sport when I played it.
Well, what we have going on behind us is it's a game called Dagger Here that pretty much mixes the worlds of medieval Europe and Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. Pretty much this game's been around for about 30 years. Pretty much the best way to explain it is it's paintball with swords.
Paintball with swords, yeah.
That's a good way of explaining it.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about it. You guys introduced yourself as something like your name of Irindor. So what's Irindor exactly?
Irindor is a chapter of Dagger Here. See, Dagger Here is a large non-profit organization that is nationwide, and each individual group can receive a license or a charter to make their own chapter, and they can pretty much take the set rules, the standard, everyone, and then kind of make it their own. They make up their own games with it. So it's kind of like a D&D getting the books, and then, oh wait, you can make up your own rules that kind of follow the guidelines.
Okay, okay.
Then within each chapter, you also have your units. You know, within Irindor, we have, just to name a few units, the Imperial Guard, we've got our pirates, you know, we got our Dugans, and just to name a few.
Okay, I see. So how many chapters are there across the entire country?
Oh.
Any guesses?
I could probably say probably about...
Quite a few.
I would say 30 to 40, probably.
30 to 40?
Just off the top of my head, guessing.
What about the rest of the world? Is it like, does Dagger Here extend across the seas? So we actually got quite a few listeners over in like Canada and Australia and England and a few new people in Finland.
There's definitely Canadian chapters and chapter in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
But as far as across the pond, I haven't been there to see.
I'm sure there's people that do similar things over in Europe, but as far as I don't think there's not any official Dagger Here chapters, okay. But I'm sure there are people who do similar.
There's new chapters starting up all the time, too. Something that happened to me recently is I was at a family reunion. I was talking to some cousins. Somehow Dagger Here came up, and I found out that they had their own chapter that they just started that, you know, nobody really knew anything about because they were brand new. Mm. We got together. A few our guys went over there to show them some things, and they came to one of our events.
It was in Traverse City.
So yeah, it was pretty cool.
It was a little bit of a drive.
Yeah. No, only 3 hours. Not a big deal.
Now, let's do this right off the bat. Spell Irindor for them, because so they're listening along here. They can type into Google and search some stuff on
it. Yeah, or you can just go to Irindor.com, which is www.erynndor.com.
So that's got information about people, the member of the chapter.
That has bios on all of us. That has a ton of pictures. It has links to some Google videos that we have on there. Also, there's instructional how-to, how to build the swords, how to build the spears, how to build pretty much all of our weapons that we have on there. There's also some artwork that some of our people have done, kind of like their idea of what maybe their character looks like or, you know, what other characters look like. And just all kinds of information on how to join Irindor or even, you know, how to get involved with an area near you. So.
And practice time and event times.
Yeah, yep. And watch those videos. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, also we have our forum on there also where you can get, it's pretty much our way of communicating with each other in Irindor because, you know, Irindor is, you know, from Toledo, Ohio, to Rochester, Michigan. Okay. And so that's how we communicate with each other is through our forum. So,
because you mentioned you have a northern and southern Irindor, so it's like kind of split in two halves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Makes sense. So let's talk a little about the rules of the game here. So, I mean, the guy, it looks, you know, from here, just there's a bunch of chaos going back. There are people wailing on each other. Is there actually a formal rule structure to this game and how you play it?
There definitely is. There's different weapon types. There's different things you do depending on what weapon you're getting mm-hmm. hit with. But the simple thing you're holding right there, this is what is categorized as a blue weapon. It is a smaller melee weapon, pretty much. You're holding a sword. So you want to slash with that sword. You want to hit them with a side that looks like the slashing side. And one thing about this weapon, it is blue and blue only. That means there's no piercing tip. A lot of people, when they first pick up a sword, they say, I'm going to stab someone, because they see movies, you stab people's swords. Yeah. No piercing tip on that. You have to make them differently with an open cell foam.
Yeah. Pretty much the idea behind the rule set is that we're all about the simplicity. We're all about the flow of gameplay. There are other games which are similar to us, but they're more... Their rule set is significantly different and more...
Complex.
That's the word I'm looking for. More detailed. And they'll throw spell balls and do stuff like that. Where Dagger here is just more about the flow of gameplay. You know, one hit here is dead. You know, or, you know, you lose that arm. You know, you just one hit up to the arm and you lose that arm. As opposed to, you know, taking multiple hits. However, if you are wearing armor, you know, you can take... It blocks a first hit. So if I was wearing armor on this arm, I would take the hit and I was like, oh, say armor. Then I'd take a second hit and then I would lose that arm.
Yeah. No character sheets in Dagger here.
Yeah.
It's all skill based, and if you don't have that skill in real life, then you don't have it in the game either.
Right. And also, so if you know, random newbie comes up first time in practice and they're fighting somebody who's been playing for 20 years and they come up and they hit that person that's been 20 years and hit in the chest, well, that person's just dead. There's no hierarchy there that says that they can take more hits from a newer person. It's just simplicity, what works best for the game flow. Just keeps things moving along. So
basically, it works. Whatever you get hit, you lose.
Yeah,
so like arm lost.
Yeah,
leg,
it's like army dodge. It's like army dodgeball playing on, where you just take whatever's hit. So if you take you hit an arm, that arm is to be considered rendered useless. So you can no longer use this arm. So you just got to throw that arm behind the back, just so everyone on the field can see that that arm is gone. Or if you get hit in the leg, you would just drop down like this leg is gone. You can still hobble around. And you know, if you lose two limbs, then you're considered bleeding to death and you're just dead. Or if you're struck in the chest or crotch, butt, or back, then you're just dead. It's considered having like a sword put through your torso and you just would die. The head and the neck, however, are not legal targets, so you can't come up and just whack somebody in the face. You know, we're about gameplay, but number one for us is safety. So safety first, then gameplay.
So I take it, even though it's legal, it's generally discouraged to try to reel people in the crotch and just see what you can...
That is, it's legal, it's a legal target.
It hurts as bad as it sounds.
It does hurt as bad as it sounds, yes.
You want to buy a cup.
Yeah, a lot of people wear cups.
Makes sense.
But yeah, it's definitely a real possibility of getting hit in the crotch, so...
Okay, well, you're talking about different weapon types. You mentioned them just briefly, and you mentioned this is a blue weapon. What other types of weapons are out there?
Well, they go by colors. So this is a blue weapon. Mm-hmm. There's also red, green, yellow, and white.
Okay.
And it's a specialty if we just try out a catapult or some sort of massive siege weapon.
Catapults in the game?
For the first time, we tried out and actually battled on a trebuchet at an event we'll probably talk about later called Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And once you try it out, they're going to set up some rules for it, and hopefully we can get it a standard operating procedure.
Pretty much the way the weapons work is they're put up into a color, and the color is kind of what kind of weapon damage it does as far as like a motion. Like a blue weapon is considered just slashing. So instead of saying it's a slashing weapon, we just say it's a blue weapon. It's anything that just swipes. And then the green weapons are anything that has a thrusting force to it. So it's a spear, or even like if a sword had like a stabbing tip on it here, it could be a blue and a green weapon, just meaning that it swipes. But the green just represents that it stabs. The red weapon is a big blue sword, if you will. It's something that gets used with two hands. The reason it's red is because you use it with two hands. It's longer, and it can actually, like, if you have two good solid red hits on a shield, you'll break that shield. So you just go, you know, red one, red two, and then that shield, that person who's using that shield who just took two hits has to drop it down. Yellow is projectile weapons, anything that flies across the air, such as bows and arrows, or we have javelins that you throw. Those are all considered yellow. And then white weapons are just rocks, which rocks are just pretty much like a ball of foam, like a little like Nerf ball. And the reason those are classified as yellow, even though they're projectiles, is those are only head legal. Like, you can only kill somebody if you hit him in the head with that. So if I was fighting Jason, and I threw a rock and I hit him in the chest, it would have done nothing. But if I hit him in the face, it would have killed him. So
that's the one exception to the no head rule?
Yes, with the projectiles.
Arrows. Oh, and arrows too?
Arrows can also be shot in the face.
So you guys actually got bows and arrows out here then. Yep. I know so you got one hiding back there. Maybe we'll get out a little bit later. But
yep.
So we'll talk a little, I'm just curious a little about the arrows. How are they modified so they don't just like impale you and kill you on impact?
Well, I think we can let our Archer Supreme talk about that because he's recognized as a champion archer.
Really?
I won the archer tournament back at RAG 21. It was a stroke of luck, I guess you could say. But the arrows, the way they work is you would take an actual real arrow shaft and either remove the head from it or remove the tip from it, excuse me, or some people will saw off the heads if the heads don't really pop off easily. But you take the head off it so there's no tip, and you kind of build up a head. I generally build up a head with like duct tape so they have like a little thicker, almost like penny size head on it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to actually penny cap it. So you put a penny on top of the arrow shaft so that it blocks. So even the arrow came through, it'd be hitting just a penny.
Okay.
And in Arendor, just the thing that we do is we always put tail side up, because most people put head side up because that's for luck. But in Arendor archers, we say we don't need luck, so we put the tail side up. Then what we do from there is once we got the head built up with the penny cap on it, we do it generally with closed cell camping pad foam. We'll do a wrap and a cap and then a wrap and then a cap with closed cell foam. And then we take open cell foam, which is like your couch foam type stuff, and then we put a ball of that on the end of it. So now we got, you know, wrap, cap of closed cell, and then we got a ball of open cell. So it's pretty much a giant pillow that we have on the arrows.
Oh, we got some guys. Oh, we got some guys chasing after us.
They're getting scary close here.
Yeah, they really are.
Uh-oh. Watch your camera, boys. Stay away. Oars off.
All right. Well, enough yelling on those guys. So before we get talking all about the weapon construction, I want to do that a little bit. I just want to cover a little bit more on the shields. So the shields don't work just like normal armor, where one shot and they're gone.
No.
It's only the red weapons are the only ones that can actually break through them.
Yes.
So can you do crazy stuff like catch arrows? Is that legal to catch them and throw them back? Or?
So you can't actually with
even
an arrow.
Obviously, it's sort of easy
with an arrow, you have to. This is kind of one of those. This is a realism. I talked about, you know, earlier. There's the way our game works is safety, playability, realism. There's different like the hierarchy of how we do that. But with realism, we would consider that for safety, we don't let people use like these massive pound bows.
Okay.
You know, you can only have a 35 pound or less recurve bow. You can't have a compound bow, or you can't have something that just, you know, is a 80 pound bow that just fires an arrow like a missile. You know, we only have 35 pound, which will surprisingly launch an arrow a pretty good distance. However, they can only go a certain fast, especially because it's only 35 pounds and there's a giant pillow on the end, which makes the trajectory go rather significantly slower. So as part of, that's our safety, we only let you pull 35 pound for safety. But for realism, once an arrow is in flight, you're not allowed to hit it with a weapon or catch it. You can't ninja. There's no ninjing the arrow. The only thing that can take an arrow out of the air is a shield. So if you're getting shot at, you can block your arrow with your shield.
Makes sense.
But if you were to physically, like, deflect an arrow down on purpose, you're considered dead.
Okay. So I'm just curious, how do you resolve issues in like conflict when you get hit? Like if I come across here and hit them both like in arm and chest or something, how do you determine where you actually got hit? Who makes the call of that?
It's honor battle. So, you know, it's really up to the person that gets hit to decide where they got hit. You know, so if it was an arm and a chest, the person that got hit could choose to take that chest is what I do, because I'm very honorable.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, somebody might decide, well, you know, it was kind of really soft on the chest. I took the brunt of that on the arm, so I'm going to take an arm. And if you're, you know, a real creep, you're not going to take either one. But you're not going to be really popular if you do that.
Yeah, everyone knows those guys, and we talk about them behind their backs relentlessly.
Well, that's nice, you guys.
So
I mean,
it will be made fun of.
It really is an honor battle, and you ruin it. You ruin it for yourself though if you try to cheat, because you know, as Farion said the other day, and I love this. You're cheating at a pillow fight, so you're not. You might like win the battle that one time if you try to cheat, but really over the course, you know, playing a few times, if you continue to cheat, you're ruining it for yourself.
Generally, if you become a cheater that gets out of hand, you have to have a conversation with me. So, I mean, unless you want to have some kind of be have the awkward conversation pulled off to the side with me and being like, hey, bro, you know, some people are kind of complaining about your hit taking. So that's, I mean, we generally try to be fairly proactive about people who are hit taking. I know someone was making a joke about people, we talk about behind their back, but yeah, we do try to pull off because we want the game flow. I mean, if you're cheating, the game flow gets hurt and we want things to keep going smooth. And to be honest, like, if you're on a field with 100 people fighting and you're not taking your hits, you get pointed out really quickly, and so you do stand out.
Okay, well, I want to go back and talk a little bit more about the weapon construction we got here. By any chance, can we get this cover off? Because see, it's inside
a drawstring.
Yeah, let me see if I can get this guy.
You keep talking about this closed cell phone, open cell phone, and all this, you know, these terms that people probably aren't terribly familiar with if they never played the game before.
Yeah.
Let me see.
So, like, so what's in the very center of these weapons? Obviously, there's something nice and hard in here. It's not all just pure foam.
Yeah, well, this sword actually was purchased from an online vendor.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is not something that we made, but because there is pretty much a place online where you can buy these from. But what's in the middle of this one is a fiberglass rod.
Okay.
Which there are rules on what you can use as cores. You can use like fiberglass. Pretty much most people's swords that you see out there that they make, if it's homemade, it's generally just a piece of half-inch PVC from Home Depot. Mm-hmm. But pretty much this is just a fiberglass rod that's covered with this closed cell foam. It's like camping. You can see how it's like camping pad foam, where it's has give to it, but it's a little more solid. And it's just pretty much there's one piece of foam here on this side, and then there just goes three wraps of that on this to create like a blade, if you will. And this is actually where you strike people with, is with this blade, not with the paddle side. And then just it's just rope covered, and then you have to have a pommel on the end of all the weapons, just so the butt end. Because, you know, obviously the most dangerous part of a weapon is the tip. So we always make sure we check them, we check tips, and we check the pommel. Because, you know, even though the pommel's with you, a lot of times if you're fighting, you can come across on somebody like this. Mm-hmm. Or even if, you know, I've been hit, you know, in the eye with stuff. You definitely don't want, if there's not a pommel here, to catch this with an eye. Yeah, and even like there are certain kind of, the way we check weapons is like this has to be at least 2 inches.
Okay.
If this is too small and it passes, we have like little wooden things that we use.
Templates.
Yeah, templates. Yeah. If that pokes through that easily, then it fails. And they have to put another layer on. And the reason for that is simply because, you know, nothing that can get into the eye socket.
Okay, that makes sense.
So
what about this foam, or this closed cell foam here? Where do you get this kind of stuff from? Where's places? Walmart. Place you can buy it from?
Walmart,
the main
Ozark
place?
Trail. Their stock went way up when Dagger here started.
Yeah, it's pretty much, it's blue camping pad foam from Walmart is generally the number one source that pretty much Dagger here uses for their closed cell foam.
Yeah.
It's just Walmart. It's $6 a roll. A roll will make you probably a good 6-7 swords. So that's pretty much where we get it from. It's not the most the high quality of open cell foam. There's other stuff called for closed cell foam. Forgive me. The best closed cell foam you can get is called Evolite. Mm-hmm. You can order it online, and it's obviously, when I said that, you know, a roll is $6 from Walmart, the Evolite is, I believe, $25 for a sheet online plus shipping. So obviously that's a little more expensive. And generally, you know, people, if they use Evolite, they just do like an outer layer of Evolite. It's nicer. It doesn't, like this stuff breaks down. This stuff eventually just kind of, after using this for, you know, a couple of months, this stuff kind of implodes on itself, and it's just no longer any good. Or you get, like, weird soft spots where the foam just can't take it anymore. But Evolite actually is pretty good. It holds out, and the shelf life on it is significantly longer. So
what about glue? What do you guys glue? Obviously, these things are glued together somehow. What do you guys use?
DAP.
DAP?
DAP contact adhesive.
Really nasty smelling stuff that causes brain damage.
Yeah,
you breathe
it's really
in.
Bad high. Yeah.
You want to make sure the windows
well-ventilated area.
Yeah, well-ventilated.
Well-ventilated.
You know, if you're doing it indoors, which you really shouldn't do it indoors, but if you have to, because that's the only space you have, you want to make sure that all the windows are open. You know, get some airflow if you can. You know, generally the way to do it is like a porch or a garage with the door open.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, or a field if you have access to that sort of thing.
And just pretty much once we cut swords out, once we get the swords and the blades all cut out, we'll take just another piece of foam to apply it. When you apply, pretty much the way DAP works, you just apply to both sides, and DAP sticks to DAP.
Okay.
For those of you who are going to try this at home, just a tip with the DAP, less is more. You don't really want to, I mean, you apply a whole lot. You want to apply DAP. You can't just apply DAP and stick it together. You actually have to apply the DAP, wait about 4 minutes, 5 minutes, let it dry. And once you can see that it actually does it, it actually turns like glossy looking. And once that does, then you stick it together and then it actually like immediately adheres. Thank you. To the other side.
So check out that irindoor.com because it's got more detailed tutorials on how to do that stuff.
Yep.
So I won't go into the details how I build all the different weapons, but they're all built kind of similar, just the same type of foam, glue them on, wrap around like a PVC core, and just...
Yeah, and I mean, major differences is like certain things with stabbing tips, like we mentioned before, they have to have open cell foam on them.
A little bit softer
like a spear, like the way I build my spears that I built recently is I did like a wrap cap, and I put a third cap, so I have three caps of foam on the end. It's got three caps of like this open or this closed cell foam. And then what I did was I actually took a Nerf football and I shaved the point off the front of it, and then I took a little bit further than half the football back and shaved it. So now I have this big block of Nerf football that I actually is a type of open cell foam, and I put that on the end of it, and that worked good for a stabbing tip on a spear.
Ah, very cool. Ingenious little use there.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some events. I know you guys mentioned the name Ragnarok. Right now behind us, you guys call this a practice session, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really formal going on right now?
It's an event.
Hey, there's food?
That's how I always ask, if it's on an unusual day, like if you're doing something on a Saturday, is there going to be food there? Okay, it's an event. Mark that on my calendar.
Or generally, you have to pay for entrance fee onto an event also.
Yeah, okay. That could be one way.
But yeah, what's going on here is just a weekly practice. I know we call it practice.
A little bit.
We call it practice, but I don't really know why. I mean, it's just generally what they do call it is practice. But pretty much, we just have fighting going on, just like normal. The fighting's passing that way now. But with practice, it just means that we're getting together and it's our weekly battle that we have. Pretty much, we have a battle. When you die, you're just out for that battle, and then 3 minutes later, we get back up and do it again. With event generally, there's people coming from all over. You say you're going to host an event, all the other local chapters and other local units will come out. Some people will, drive out to our events from at least, we have like the Legion of the Dragoons who drive out from Indiana, and they drive a good 5 hours to come fight with us. Practice is here. They have generally about 20 to 30 people. Events have anywhere from 60 to 150 people. And, you can have our national event, which is our week-long campout Ragnarok, which has, last year, had 1,266 people there.
1,266?
Yeah.
From all over the country?
From all over the country, that as far cool. as California and...
Puerto Rico and Canada.
Puerto Rico and Canada.
Yeah. It's a pretty tight community, too. I mean, it's one of the other aspects of the game that I really like. Like, really, these people, by far are my best friends, And, it's that community thing that gets people to drive 3, 5, or more hours to come to an event where they, it might be a day thing where they got to drive 5 hours and to drive another 5 hours home, that same thing. Just a couple of weeks ago, we drove 3 hours to Traverse City to, go to my cousin's group's event. The brand new group just starting up, so we really wanted to support them. And the community aspect is just really, really tight. Mm-hmm.
So let me talk about this now. You've each got some different type of clothing on here. It's obviously not normal clothes you wear around throughout the normal week. So what's the deal with the clothes here? Is it do you guys call it? Why do you do it?
Some people might look and say, oh, what, are you in a play or something? It's a very common question we get. But,
Lord of the Rings on ice.
Lord of the Rings on ice?
It's a role-playing game. It's a LARP. It's a live-action role-playing game. So we're a little more free wear. Sometimes some people, they don't really want to role play at all. They just want to get out there and hit people with foam sticks. That's
called stick jocks.
Some of us really want to get into the role playing aspect, and therefore we wear the stuff like this. We call it garb. It's pretty much, your uniform, your costume, whatever you want to call it. It could be, a lot of people take pride in making it themselves, which is a good thing. Or if you, aren't the best seamstress or whatnot.
Taylor,
if you want to be a boy who does it. You can go out and get things from Salvation Army. You can get things from any, like, your Goodwills. Pretty much, you want to put together something that's going to represent your character. Mm-hmm. And if you're into the role play, you're into your character, you know what that person's going to wear.
Some of the best garb that I've ever seen actually comes from Salvation Army. You'd be surprised, what... people can put together just by making some slight modifications to, things you can find at a secondhand store.
Yeah, in the way, like Stone was talking about, like your garb, some people, if you can, they can't probably see us behind us, I think we're taking a break.
Take a break right now.
Some people, like there's some groups with their garb, they look at it more as a uniform. Like, for example, the Imperial Guard with us, like, they wear purple and black. Just to be part of the Imperial Guard, you have to wear Imperial black, or you have to wear black and purple. And there's other groups where they have to, there's just certain colors that you have to wear. For example, there's another group called the Justigeist, and they all wear black with, like, their white symbol on the front of their shirts. And to be part of the Justigeist, that's what you have to wear, like, the black shirts with the white Justigeist symbol on the front of you. But for Arendor, one of the things that we encourage is, you know, kind of be creative with your character. Like, for example, you've probably noticed me and Stone here are wearing similar shirts, with the navy blue shirts with the gray stripe. And what that represents in our world, in Arendor's world, our continent, if you will, our Middle Earth, if you will, we have a city called Hedor, which is the last great city of men. And what the shieldmen there would wear is the blue with the gray stripe across their shirts. And so my character, it was a Hedorian soldier, as was Stone. He's a Hedorian soldier that now we fight with the Crusade. And Zaftin, if you want to talk a little about your character and what your garb represents.
My garb represents clearance on Walmart. And it was actually some nice fabric, so I got it. And it made, you know, I like to think some really nice garb here. The pants are simply, I mean, you can tell sweatpants, again, from Walmart, which is kind of like a Dagger Here superstore. Boots, army surplus, you know, wanted to get something that was somewhat, you know, period looking, so just black boots do the trick. I mean, this is really some good-looking garb on the cheap. You know, I was really penny-pinching when I put this together. Some people, on the other hand, you know, they'll spend hundreds of dollars on armor, their garb, they purchase everything, you know, so you can put into financially Dagger Here whatever you want, you know, do like myself, you know, on the cheap. I don't have a lot of money. I think the most expensive thing I'm wearing is actually this belt, which I bought at an event for like $20, you know, or you could end up spending hundreds of dollars on armor, on a helmet, on belt, fancy shirt, some period boots, which can run a few hundred dollars, pants.
Or sometimes you use the hand-me-down pants that came away from a couple of different people. Not wearing them today, but they're still around.
Yeah. So you're talking about, you guys are from, sorry, what's the name of the city you guys represent?
Hedor.
So does every chapter have its own little backstory to it and who they are and explain why they fight and what they're fighting for?
Not every chapter does that. Arendor, we like to, generally with Dagger Here, it's probably, I would say, a good 90-95% fighting and then a 5% role play. And where that role play comes in is where you create name for yourself, like Varian or Stone, Zaffin. And when you go to an event, like, I never refer to him as his real name. I always refer to him as Stone. And in fact, these guys are my closest friends. I don't really refer to them as their real names ever anymore. But that's where generally most chapters, that's generally as far as they take the role play.
Okay.
But with Arendor, we like to be a little more creative with our role play. And there are other chapters who do this. But they create a world. They create, for us, we created our continent. And there's actually war going on in this continent. And Arendor is the ones who are crusading against it, crusading against the evil that's trying to take over our world. And so what we'll do is we'll have an event, and at our event, the very last battle will be a main scenario battle, and the outcome of the battle actually gets written into the Arendor storyline.
Okay.
So the storyline's always building.
Yep.
So if Arendor in this battle loses the battle, because we'll split it up, like, we'll have, okay, you know, if you're going to fight for the forces of good, go over here. If you're going to fight for the forces of evil, go over there. And generally people, if they're going to fight evil, they'll dress up as orcs, they'll paint their skin all, like, dark black and dye their hair up, you know, black, or put red in them, or, you know, some people will do, like, the hand on them.
The hand of the Urukai?
Yeah, like the Urukai. Well, sometimes they'll do, like, a red hand or something, or you know, white hand, or...
You can tell the evil people.
Yeah, you can obviously see the red...
you can tell.
There we have one of our close friends, Mogrith. He's a goblin. He dresses up. He paints his skin all up green, or even has, like, a goblin mask with the ears. He has, like, the big pointy ears out. And he'll run around and talk like a goblin and yell at you like a goblin, and... That's the role play that we take.
Probably the best role player on the field.
Yeah, he does a very good job of that. But if Arendor just so happens to lose the battle, then in Arendor's storyline, that's the way the storyline turns. And so that's pretty much how our storyline works out.
So the evil guys you talk about, they memorize Arendor 2 or they memorize another chapter?
No.
You guys, like, have a rivalry going with someone else? Like,
you have, like, good Irindor and evil Irindor.
Okay.
It's the same chapter, but, you know, for the sake of storytelling, you know, some people are more interested in being evil. Some, like, my character is kind of like, you know, the hero character. You know, and then, you know, where somebody else might want to role play, like, the evil character, the anti-hero.
Yeah, generally with Arendor, like, we're all buds, we're all comrades, but, you know, on the field it just happened to be that, like, for example, Mog, he's one of my best friends. I was talking about him before, the goblin. Mm-hmm. He's one of my best friends in real life, you know, and in Arendor, but, like, when it comes to sheer storyline, like, I am 100% fighting for the light and fighting for good, and he is just fighting for evil. So a lot of times during scenario battles, we'll have to square off against each other, which is cool, which we both like doing. But we pretty much, and sometimes I'll dress up in another character, evil, I'll paint my face all up and be like my alternate character, if you will.
That is the freedom where if you feel like, all right, today's event, I'm going to be evil, I'm not going to be stone, I'm going to be someone else, throw on some different garb, you know, maybe fight with a different set of weapons than you normally
do. That's very common. Usually people have, you know, two characters, sometimes three, four, I mean, you know, you can have as many characters as you want. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to know what to call you on any given day, though, if you're... You know, coming back with a new character every week.
So you were talking earlier, you mentioned you don't have any stat sheets or any crazy, you know, like, ability, you know, given role-playing abilities or anything.
No.
But do you guys ever actually play, like, adventures, you know, like, kind of like a Dungeons & Dragons-style adventure where you actually have a little storyline for, like, a couple people to play as? There's, like, a game master who's trying to, like, stop you guys or something?
We never really have a GM, if you will, or a game master or a DM or anything like that. The scenario battles, I mean, really are, like, there is a storyline. Before we start the fight, you know, we'll have our people come over running the event, and they will seriously sit down and sort of, like, read us, like, here's a scenario, here's the setup, setting, you got your heels against the wall, what are you going to do, and kind of give you a little breakdown. I mean, that's a lot of role plays right there.
We actually also did recently an event called Crossroads, which the event actually was based, it was generally with Dagger Here events, it's just, like, fighting based, and... but we did there's like campouts we talked about earlier, but this campout in particular was role play based. And when you showed up, you at check in, when you registered to check in, you told them I'm fighting for good or I'm fighting for evil.
Mm-hmm.
And they were splitting up teams that way. And pretty much we went out into the woods and there were two sides. There was an evil camp and a good camp. They each had a flag, each had a, you know, leader, camp leaders. And there were special role playing characters around the woods that you had to talk to and try to trade with. There was a currency on that field.
Interesting.
And it was a 2-day battle that pretty much went on. And like if you died, you had to go back to your camp and res. But you were trying to capture certain of the RP characters for your team, trying to interrogate them, get stuff out of them. And it literally was a 2-day event where you were in character the entire time. You were always trying to invade the other team's camp. Like, I know we were eating dinner one time, and the bad guys decided to invade us. We had to drop what we were eating and jump up and grab our swords and fight. That's probably the highest, like, the highest level of role-playing that I've ever seen in a Dagger Here setting. And it was difficult to do, but it actually was also very successful. Everyone seemed to really enjoy it, so.
Yeah, and Dagger Here is actually, like, a lot of games within a game. You know, because even right now, they have different games that they're playing with the dagger. I'm not sure what they're doing right now, but they're using the Dagger Here rules, and they might be playing like a capture the flag type thing. They might be playing what's you know, a king battle, legendary shield, you know, and I don't know if you want to get into all those are, but I mean, there's like 100 probably different games you can play with Dagger Here.
I'm curious to eventually get back to the trebuchet you were talking about earlier, but let's talk about some of the smaller games. Like, what's the King Battle or Sacred Shields called? What are those games like?
A King Battle is, you know, it's one of my favorite games. It's kind of like, think of, like, Capture the Flag, except, like, you divide up into two teams. Mm-hmm. You have one person on each team be the king.
Okay.
And some of our battles are what we call res battles or resurrection battles, where you can, like, run back to a base. And once you touch that base, you can then your character comes back to life and goes back to fight again.
Mm-hmm.
And King Battle is one of those games. When the king dies, though, the king does not resurrect, and nor can anybody on the team can no longer resurrect and come back to life.
So
just and fight.
Protect the king. So the king dies, the base of your army is going to die for shortly afterwards.
Right, right. Okay. Well, not necessarily. I mean, it's happened where a king will die on one team, and then the other team still manages to pull it off, even though, you know, they can't resurrect, but usually that's the case. you know, capture the flag is your standard capture the flag. Legendary shield is kind of like both of those in the sense that you have two shields on either side, and the object of the game is to possess both shields and touch them together. And then there's a lot of
I don't think
you got time.
We got a few minutes left. One more I want to talk about is looking on some of the pictures from Ragnarok. You're playing a castle siege scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that. I'm curious how that worked out. What was the castle built out of? How that game play out, or how did you do that?
Well, one of the things that we're looking to do in the future, it always gets talked about, is people are wanting to put up permanent structures for Dagger here. But in the meantime, people to Ragnarok will bring it's just a wooden structure. There's just wooden, it's very solidly built, but there's like wooden parts of the castle that they put up. They put archer towers up. And it gets backed by, there's like little wooden triangles that will hold it up because people actually do lean against it, you know, not... They discourage that, and they're trying to... Actually, this year they put hay bales up so people wouldn't lean against the castle because, you know, you got a space that's 15 feet wide and you're trying to squeeze 600 people through that one space. People push and just think sometimes the castle, a wooden structure, just is not going to hold that. So this year they put hay bales up so people weren't leaning against the castle, and actually you couldn't actually get right up against the wood this year. But pretty much the way it works is there's one team inside the castle, one team trying to raid it. And there's been battles. They'll do like the Battle of Osgiliath, where there's the castle, and there's openings on. There's two sides. There's two doors to the castle, and each team is resurrecting from each side of the castle. And you're trying to push in, and whoever at the end of that battle is holding the castle wins. And it'll go for like 30 minutes, and they just keep. Just keep coming. Yep. Just nonstop. You die, you just go back to touch and just keep coming.
So you're trying to push the other person out of the castle?
Yeah, you're trying to get, because it eventually forms as lines, and the lines pushes up, and their line pushes up. And so you're trying to actually kill them enough to where if you can decimate their line enough, they're so outnumbered, they have to force to kind of backpedal a little bit. And so if they backpedal, then you're pushing their line back.
Okay, makes sense.
So
is in the castle siege, is that when the trebuchet comes into play, or do you use that in normal battles?
The trebuchet, again, was a special kind of weapon, you know, they're testing it out, yeah, getting it going. Yeah, but... Actually, the trebuchet itself was on an open field battle. There's no castle. It was for decimating people.
So what did it fire?
usually killed more of our own team.
Oh, yeah, I did.
It, like, break but apart and stuff.
Honestly, it's giant foam rocks, like a normal rock is like a Nerf ball covered or something like that. They had to make specially constructed because they had to have a little weight to them, else they're not going to fly. Mm. I mean, but they made them with, I believe, open cell and closed cell.
They were just Nerf footballs. Or not Nerf soccer balls.
Okay. Oh, okay.
About like this.
Okay.
Yeah, so a good-sized ball, and the way those worked was you launch that right on in there, and you treat that as if it is, you know, a giant boulder. You know, that's where a little bit of role play comes in again. So even if it just hit your arm, I lost an arm. No, that was a giant boulder.
You just got
that
decked.
That killed you. You are dead. It's actually, it hits you, bounces into someone, rolls into people. It kills you. This is like a giant ball of death.
Yeah, and it for safety, it had to get off the field. Like, you couldn't actually roll that around on the field.
Yeah.
Because it is a giant wooden arm that's swinging like that.
Okay.
So that was off the field, firing onto the field.
You could destroy it, though.
Yeah, if I was on the other team and I wanted to destroy it, I'd run by the edge of the field, and there was, like, a flag that I'd knock over, and then it was considered to be destroyed.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, I guess we're kind of running out of time here. Last little thing I just want to cover, talk back a little bit about the weapons. What kind of weapons do you guys fight with? What's your preferred weapon style, and why do you choose that?
I fight mainly with a sword and shield.
Okay.
Pretty standard, yes, but I find the most fun with it. There's so many different variety of shots you can throw with a sword and shield, and you know, it's a good amount of skill to use one, to be really good with one. So it challenges me, and I enjoy it, so that's why I use it.
Well, my favorite weapon style to fight with is a medium length sword like this and just a medium punch shield.
Okay.
I tend to have the most fun with that. However, I'd probably say I'm best at, I have a giant door shield that I fight with. I call it a door shield because it goes from pretty much my ankles all the way up to like just below my neck. Mm-hmm. And it's a strap shield that I fight with, and I have a, like a longer flail that I use.
Okay.
That's what I'm best with. But I also, you know, very much enjoy arching. Arching is a lot of fun for me, and I also, you know, enjoy a spear or stuff like that, so I fight anything.
I'm purely sword and board, sword and shield. You know, it's that's the weapons that you usually start off with when you play for the first time, And if you look at the most advanced, like best fighters, generally they're fighting sword and shield. So
okay,
that's what I fight with.
Just gives you a nice balance of offense and defense to be able to.
Yep.
Yeah, especially when arrows start raining at you.
Yeah.
I mean, some people think, oh, I got two swords, I can aggress two sides. But when an arrow's come at you, you got nothing to block with.
Makes sense.
So.
All right, anything else you guys want to talk about then?
Ragnarok. We didn't really talk a whole lot about Ragnarok.
Talk more about it?
Yeah.
It's our major event.
3 or 4 minutes here.
Ragnarok is, if you're big into Dagger here, Ragnarok is what it's all about. You know, it's pretty much like you live from one Ragnarok to the next. I mean, you know, if you look at like away messages for some of our like big players, they just have like countdowns till Ragnarok, you know, like going already. It's a week-long camping trip where, you know, you're with your best friends in the whole world hanging out. You're in character 24/7. You know, you're living, eating, breathing, sleeping Ragnarok Dagger here that whole week.
Yeah.
It's just really exciting. You fight usually for only a few hours a day. There's a lot more like role playing and just fun things to do. There's what's called Merchant's Row, where you can buy stuff. I mean, again, if you're one of those people that have a lot of money to shell out on that, that's where I got my belt. You know, and it is like the Dagger here event. It's really exciting, a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely like the main event for Dagger here. The coolest thing is like you set up a camp, like Arendor sets up a camp.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have our tents going in almost like an old school like army camp, like where you actually have like roads going through the camp. A giant banner out in front of your camp, and when you go into another person's camp, like you walk in and you hail camp, like then they'll let you come in. Some people have guards posted in front of their camp.
What did we have last year? 1,400.
It was 1,266.
Okay,
there.
All right.
And the fighting got every day. Pretty much the way it works. Every day you get up, you go to weapons check, and then you fight from like 12 to 5 every day. And last year the fighting got up till like I think like 650 people on the field at one time.
Wow.
So
that is just crazy.
I mean, when you're in an army that's, you know, 300 people on just your team, it's pretty amazing. It's a pretty awesome feeling. So
one of my favorite things was marching the field with Arendor.
Yeah.
We had a line of 2 or 4. And we were quite the long line of people.
Yep, we marched the field in formation to go to the battle, and generally the field would attack us, and there's 300 of them and only 100 of us, so they overwhelm us. But
yep.
So
do you guys always fight strictly on a chapter basis, or do you team with other chapters for battles?
No.
Well, in our events, we fight against each other.
Well, like at Ragnarok.
Ragnarok, pretty much, yeah, like they split up your chapter.
Ragnarok's so huge that you can do that sort of thing.
Yeah. And that is your time to fight with your chapter and fight with your unit. That is, like, they have unit battles and chapter battles. And then when they split up teams, they're like, all right, Arendor, go over here. Arataria, go over here. Mm-hmm. So
there's still a lot of just open fights, too, where you can just fight with people you don't even know. You can be out there with the only person you know is you and yourself. And, hey, look, these guys are fighting. I'll join their game.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, it's been about 45 minutes here, so it's about time to call it quits. Just bear with me for one second. I got two little news notes I got to talk about, and then we'll be done.
Fair enough.
Just while the 40K players out there, Games Workshop has started taking reserve orders for the Apocalypse figures that you can get. Most of them only require a $20 deposit, but all the direct order ones, like the Tau Hunter Cadre or the Tyranid Forces, do require a full down payment ahead of time. And also, other little fun news note, obviously next week we're going to be seeing the release of Halo Action Click, so I'll be picking some of that game up and let you know how it works out. So, I want to thank you guys here.
Thank you very much.
If you have any questions or comments about the show, I'm Jason at rocklessoftware.com. Do you guys got like, an email that people can contact you with?
Yeah.
Do you have any questions? Or?
Yeah, you can get onto the Arendor.com website. It's Erynor.com. Contact us that way. My email is djjohnst@oakland.edu.
Do you really want to give that out?
Yeah, you guys can email if you have any questions.
All right, well, you heard from him. So, thanks for watching. I'll see you again in about 2 weeks. Have a good day.
Copyright 2007 Rocko Software, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. The intro music down with everything is by The Transfer. It was acquired from www.podsafeaudio.com.